topic, or what's the value in thinking through bringing the humanities and nature together? And I don't ask this to be pedantic. I think it's actually a pretty urgent question. You see more and more journals coming out. You see more and more books coming out trying to kind of relate the humanities to nature, and humanists, be they people in literature or history or philosophy or religious studies, making the case that humanists need to be part of our discussions about the environment, about the future of the earth, about the future of our communities, etc. And so I've got a few thoughts on arguments that are typically given for why this is the case. But I really mostly want to spend this stop to hear from you about what you're interested in this kind of connection with the humanities and nature. The standard reasons that are given for why humanists need to be part of this discussion are ones you probably expect. One, that the humanities are particularly good at asking value questions, right? The hard sciences don't engage, right? Questions of meaning, questions of what we want when we relate to the natural world, how we ought to do it, what we broadly conceive of as normative questions, by which all I mean the norms we live by, be they ethical expectations, cultural practices, social norms and expectations, etc. So I think that's one thing we can look at today is what can we figure out, or what can we say, or how can we speak better about valuing nature. The other kinds of reasons you often see have to do with the specific habits of mind that the humanities teach us. I'm always jealous of my colleagues in history who can really trace out quickly and well and comprehensively the connection between intentions and consequences, right? They just have so many stock examples where they can say, you intend to do this, well, this is how the consequences are going to go. And it's not that people in other fields can't do that, but the humanities seem very well practiced in doing that. The way people who are involved in literature can speak about human motivation and human desire and the particularities of human folly, I think is really valuable when we think about moving forward and trying to make up for some of the sins of the past. As a philosopher, I like to think that we can give a lot of conceptual clarity in terms of what we talk about when we talk about the natural world and how we conceive of our relationship to it. I study a period in which the natural world was very much viewed as a mechanism for human progress. And that's maybe not exactly the way we want to always think about it. But without being able to really clearly spell out what that is, I don't even think we can get a conversation started about how we're going to move forward. So I think that's another reason the humanities are oftentimes called into these discussions about nature, even by people who are physical scientists, natural scientists, right? That these are just skills, these are kinds of discourses that we don't have much practice in. The third thing I'd mention, then I want to hear from everybody here and what your interests are. I'd like to think, and I don't think this is an exclusive domain of the humanities. I think there are lots of natural scientists, social scientists, engineers, etc., who are really good at doing this. But insofar as many of my colleagues in the natural sciences present themselves as sort of giving us facts, giving us what is the case about nature, studying what is, I like to think that the humanities are especially adept at keeping possibilities alive and thinking through possibility, and thinking through things that are counterfactual. I have a colleague, he's a theologian, so this example always resonates with him. I think we could find others, who always brings up the fact that, you know, the scientist who first proposed the Big Bang, George Lemaître, did that through a reading of Genesis, right? And it's not the case that we should ever ask religion to dictate what science says, but it's just the case that because he had that kind of cultural background, he was like, I don't know, it's at least possible that there was a beginning to time. Right, and that possibility in his mind, I think, allowed him to see things in the scientific equations that other people couldn't see. I think as we think through possibilities for our future, be they dystopian or hopeful, this is something that the literature really engages well, that the humanities engage well. One of the best philosophy books I tell everybody that I've read in the past 5 years. Is a extended meditation on what we would do if we were the last generation on Earth, right? what would you actually do if you knew you were the last generation on Earth? How would things change? And I just think, I hope we're not the last generation on Earth, but if you want to communicate urgency to people about what we would do and how we're doing things, it's a helpful thought experiment. It's not a scientific program as we conceive of it. It's not a hypothesis, but it's a very thoughtful way to kind of engage future possibilities and think about what we would do. And most of that book is actually about what we wouldn't do and how many things we would give up if we actually buy into the fact. This is something that worries me about some of our catastrophic discourse about the environment, right? That it becomes very kind of self-defeating, and then there are projects we won't engage in, but that we can engage that later. So it's been really urgent for me as somebody who, you know, practices philosophy with young people, young adults every day, to kind of think through what exactly the role is for the humanities to play when we approach nature, and how to cultivate certain habits of mind and cultivate a certain kind of relationship. I will be the first to admit to all of you, I grew up in a very urban environment. I am. This language is second to me. It's not natural to me. It's not my mother tongue, in other words. But given the urgency of all we're dealing with, I'd like to think the humanities have a role to play, again, in kind of clarifying our values and holding open certain possibilities for us to think through. But I'll end there, and then I really do want to just engage people. Like, what are you interested in kind of coming on this hike, other than Marisa always puts on a fun time. Well, what's appealing about the kind of idea of a Saturday morning talking about nature and humanities?
The human race's responsibility to protect the natural world.
Okay, responsibility, yeah.
What you said about entertaining, considering possibilities makes me think of the dynamic that occurs. I mean, I'm thinking specifically about a Jonathan Franzen article that recently came out, where he speaks about the sort of, like, we should stop pretending that we can stop climate change.
Mm-hmm.
But he talks about how the scientific models that predict that we'll get to 2 degrees Celsius. The scientists often say, yeah, the best case scenario is that we'll get to 2 degrees Celsius and we can accomplish it by making these, like, significant but doable adjustments, and, like, it's possible to do. And Franzen is sort of saying, well, and they're running, like, millions of models, and that's the best one. And he's sort of saying, well, as a writer and as someone who thinks about humans and human nature a lot, I ran my own models in my head, and given the way that political structure works, given the way that people work, I see no result where we get under 2 degrees Celsius. And so, I don't know, that's just one example of, I guess, humanity's perspective of considering different elements when it comes to considering deeper elements of value and of you know, because a lot of times scientific communication can not get at the right kind of story we should be telling. And I think that's his argument, is that the right story we should be telling is one where we're not just thinking of the best case scientific model scenario, but considering all the elements of our subjective humanity as well.
Yeah, and he got a lot of pushback for that.
He did get a lot of pushback.
He got a lot of pushback for that. I mean, whether it was interesting, but I think my reaction was somewhat similar to yours. That this is what he should be doing.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Like, somebody should be proposing this narrative and having people react to it, right? And making a case that if we're not as doomed as he says we are, then on what grounds, right? Like, what's their kind of story about human motivation and human behavior?
I think there's a second lesson there that I was kind of thinking of reflecting on this conversation, in terms of lessons from, you know, the humanistic modes of thinking and philosophy, is just in distinguishing between, you know, I think about the pushback of anytime someone tries to tell this kind of story, you know, and the pushback is, oh, well, you're denying climate change, you're, you know, hopeless, you're whatever. It's a failure to distinguish, you know, a description of a situation from a prescription for how to deal with it. Franzen is very much on board with the description of the science,
right,
that his critics are saying. But somehow they're missing that. Somehow the criticisms are not about this. Like, somehow to criticize the strategy, the response, is to make you a denier of the phenomenon.
Mm-hmm.
And that fallacy, that failure of thinking, scares them out of me. But the fact that we can't make that conceptual distinction in our discourse, and as philosophers and as humanists, what can we be doing just to be having a better conversation around those kind of things?
Going back to humanity, nature, I think Helena has a better connection, people of Helena, they understand that this is part of their life. Going to other places, you know, they're not so, I don't know how to put it, connected to nature. Whereas here you might be able to actually have a conversation to go forward, bring that to light.
You were at Emory, right?
I was, yeah.
So did you spend much time in rural Georgia talking to people?
A little bit here and there, not a lot.
What was your impression?
Do you have anything specific in mind?
I focused to make it a little bit easier. Yeah. Focus on the issues we're talking about,
yeah,
as far as people's attitudes about the environment, particularly from a humanistic point of view, instead of a fundamentalist Christian point.
Yeah, I mean, there's that there. I think there's certainly you get the fundamentalist Christian stuff. I don't know that I was ever fully able to crack, to be honest with you, the kind of, I mean, I think it's more transparent here, right? People have thought a lot, and they're pretty able to articulate what they want from the relationship with nature. And you can disagree with them, or you can agree, but people are pretty well able to articulate. I never thought it was that transparent, actually, in rural Georgia, right? I mean, there's still places that hook up with recreation. Right, a lot of protection of that, right? Bass fishing, et cetera, right? Streams, anything that's connected to recreation, which is true here as well, right? But a broader conversation about resource usage, et cetera, was tough, and tough and predictable reasons, right? Coca-Cola owns most of the water resources in Georgia, to be honest with you, right? I mean, and they fund a lot of things, right, including the university I went to. So I think those, I mean, so there are maybe the religious dynamics, but I think there are just a lot of other economic dynamics there that in some ways map onto things here, but I don't know if it's, I don't know if the discourse was ever as transparent, you know, as I wanted it to be.
You know, one thing, you know, when I think about the difference between humanities and what, you know, hard science,
right,
or whatever,
sure,
you know, I think that the main value of thinking in humanities is it will help us see things, you know, in a wider light, you know, like I've been involved in the past in urban planning and design, and so much of it. And lately it has become a matter of engineering, you know, hard engineering. How does traffic work and everything else? And almost none of it is how it feels to be there.
Oh, really?
You know, what are we experiencing? What are we actually engaging with? And so, I don't know, in my own life, when I think about stuff, I try to see things from two points of view. I take a hard scientific point of view towards something, and then I say, okay, how else can I see this thing? You know, an example I thought of walking up here was, you know, this little deer mouse running around on the ground. I don't see just a scientific, a biological thing, you know, pyramiscus, whatever, you know, is a scientific name, or is he a wee, sleek, timorous, cowering beastie, you know? And I try to see them in both ways, and I figure if I can, you know, see that mouse in both ways, I see him in all, you know, it, I don't know, it just sounds kind of silly, I guess, but I think it's, you know, I've always tried to think that way in, you know, talking about whether it's geology or whatever, or urban design, you know, I get away from the strictly mechanistic look at it.
Yeah.
you know, what does this mean to me as an emotional perceiving human being? But I don't know. I'm not sure if that means much, but that's how I see it.
No, that's
yeah. Your example of kind of two different ways, possible ways to look at how you're, whether it's the wee beastie or yeah. particular. Yeah. It's interesting, and this might tie into something we talk about in our next walks, mm-hmm. but that sort of the wonderment and that there's a little bit of, I don't want to use the word magic, but I am going to use the word magic. There's something about the humanities that does seem to invite these very poetic, magical ways of sort of conceiving of things in very different ways than science might, both of which are very valuable. But yeah, your example just reminded me of that.
I think you
got
to have both, you know, quite frankly. And when you talk about, you know, magic and mystery and poetics, it sounds like, you know, you're off there someplace, and the problem is down here in the hard science. It is, but it isn't. But our understanding of it, our approach to it, has to be guided by the stuff out there, you know. I don't know. I'll shut up, but that's just the way I can see it.
Children have a good sense of wonder and mystery. As we get older, we tend to lose that, but maybe it's not a good thing if we totally lose it.
No.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
That's going to be a lot of.
I'm a firm believer.
We're diving into wonder.
If we totally lose you,
what do we have if we don't have our imaginations?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Magic is everything to me.
Yep.
Yep.
It truly is. It separates me from the reality so that my imagination can help me comprehend what's in front of me a lot better.
Well, what I see it is, it doesn't separate me from the reality.
It doesn't.
It makes me see it perhaps in
a different
light or a more intense light, perhaps.
Yeah. Something,
right way to put it.
Something that kind of alludes to, which, and I think we'll talk later about a lot more of that kind of experiencing and what experiencing those different modes does, but just that notion of seeing things, of the virtue of seeing things from multiple perspectives, of being able to see things in multiple ways, alludes to what you were saying before about the role of the humanities in allowing us to explore possibilities. And this is like extremely relevant, I mean, to me in particular, because the university in Missoula is currently going through this sort of financial thing, and the provost there is trying to make us some kind of like rank one research institution thing that's going to cut out a bunch of the humanities like programs. And the thing about University of Montana is that traditionally and especially much more recently, it's had such an environmental focus across the board. Every single master's student in environmental philosophy, my entire cohort are in philosophy. Every single philosophy master's student is environmental philosophy. There's a large environmental studies department with environmental writing and Native American philosophy. There is an eco-criticism program, which just recently got gutted, which is sort of a literature studies focused on environment. And I was talking to the provost and sort of trying to articulate the fact that in order to address something like climate change, in order to address something like the crisis of our connection to nature, we can't just, and he himself is an environmental scientist, but you can't just have the environmental science perspective. It's a wicked problem, and the way a wicked problem is defined is that it doesn't have one solution. And so to have those multiple angles of ways of perceiving it, to have people trained to think philosophically about nature, to think about nature and literature and relationship of it to art and our culture, to think about different perspectives and worldviews in different cultures and how those, like having those different specialties is necessary because the problem demands multiple perspectives in order to address, because it's a complex problem. And so, yeah, I think that also goes to that idea that it's not that one is right and the other wrong, but that you kind of need both in order to get a full picture of what you're experiencing. And just like personal experience, you need all of these different approaches, maybe, to, if that makes sense.
No, I think it does. No, I don't think it does. I just have this quote going through my head, and forgive me again, I study kind of Enlightenment era stuff, but, you know, Francis Bacon, who's now remembered as being the great prophet of empirical science, right, described himself as being a priest of the senses. And I just always love that description, right?
it's pretty ironic.
Right? A priest of the senses, right? So, like, yeah, I'm an empirical observer, but I can't think you use that word priest by accident unless you have a sense of kind of devotion and wonder and awe, you know, for what you're viewing and the way you're talking about viewing the deer mouse as something that's kind of awesome and awe-inspiring. So that's not exactly to your point, but the point being, I sometimes wonder we kind of shift between two poles, right? Like there are times when we see that this is a wicked problem, and actually that the natural sciences and the humanities aren't really that far apart to begin with,
mm-hmm.
right? That like our humanistic imagination is enriched by knowing more science, and that your scientific imagination is more enriched by studying philosophy, right? And then in other times, especially when power and money come into play, right? There's just this wall, right? Yeah, makes